got back to the station again, got back into the routine, and keeping guard, watching for aeroplanes, enemy aeroplanes that never arrived, and facing the cold winter months. It was, by Jove, it was a cold winter, that 1939 and 40. We had a bit, quite a bit of snow down there. A few miles along the road from the billet where we were stationed, there was like a small hall, a women's institute hall, and they used to have dances and socials there. So I started going along there to see what they were like, and I got quite friendly with the chap who had a little five-piece band there that used to play at the dances, and I told him I was always interested in dance bands and that, and on a number of occasions I used to sit in with him. I couldn't go regular because of duty, and I used to sing some of the songs there. Everybody there were calling me Bing. So I always used to try and pick Bing Crosby songs. It helped to cheer me up a bit. Slowly I was getting over the loss of my mother, and it helped me to stop being thinking about things too much and being miserable. It was a big help to me at that time. So I went there occasionally. I was still getting marvellous letters from Joyce, beautiful letters. Sometimes she included little charming poems that she'd written, and her young brother Leslie started putting little notes in too, which used to amuse me. And Joyce sometimes mentioned boys at school that she liked. She's trying to make me jealous, I could see that. But I could see the humour that she had in them. But I could read too, between the lines in her letters, that she was breaking her neck to get away from the island and join up and do something for the war effort. I keep writing back and telling her, Wait, take your time. But since the night I'd fallen down the hole in the aerodrome, I'd been having terrible head pains in the head and dizzy spells. Used to come not every day, but occasionally, and but I kept it to myself, and I didn't tell anyone. Occasionally I used to go into the Rise Norton Aerodrome and go to the Nappy. It was quite a change to go there and have some decent cakes and decent food. And they used to have concerts there run by the RAF personnel, and I used to ask people to get up and do a turn, and I got up there and done a turn now and again, and it seemed to be well received, and it's made me all the more and more determined that I wanted to go onto the stage and become an entertainer. How I longed, I wished I could have had a big band. I used to dream of that, having a big band and going to the Villa Marina or the Palace Ballroom and playing. I'd done a bit of a tap dance too, like I used to do with me brother, and sing comedy numbers. So I used to get up and do a turn, and it's all gave me the inclination, the dream to go on and do something. I used to do impressions of Bing Crosby and Maurice Chevalier and Jimmy Durante, I used to like those. A couple of the songs I used to like singing were She's Funny That Way and Shake Hands with a Millionaire. Brother, can you spare a dime? Just one more chance. I surrender, dear. Quite a few of Bing Crosby's old numbers. But they used to go down well and used to get quite a bit of response. Then I started getting these headaches more frequent. I got aspirins and started taking loads of aspirins. Anyway, one day I was on sentry duty doing my turn, walking up and down between the two Lewis guns, and I suddenly went dizzy and I had a blackout. I don't know how long I was lying there, but one of the boys, they were in the tent keeping warm, found me lying on the ground, and they carried me back to the shelter of the tent and gave me some tea and warmed me up. In a couple of hours I felt a bit better, and I asked the fellas not to mention it to anyone. Well, a week or so after, I had another, the same thing happened. And another few more days and another, that was like three in a run. In the head, the sergeant, he reported the matter to the medical officer. So the next thing was I got word to go into HQ with the MO to see me. Now, the medical officer for the 41st Battery at that time was a Dr. Panton, a Dr. Guy Panton. And he was a brother of the Dr. Dorothy Panton, the woman doctor that my mother took me to for about epilepsy when I was a child, when I was between 7 and 14. Now, the doctor examined me and told me to take the easy until he sent for me. Sent for me again, and he asked me, he was my doctor at home. So I had to tell him, and then a few weeks later, the MO sent for me again, and he had all the facts about me medical history, into the days when I'd suffered from epilepsy. He got them from his sister, you see. So he reckoned the fall and the bang on the head had caused slight concussion, and that had brought back the epilepsy, he said. So he said he was going to recommend me for a medical board. I told him I didn't want that. I didn't want to go before the medical board because I didn't want to leave the regiment. Because the regiment, it wasn't like as if you joined up on the mainland. The 15th Light Armoured Regiment was like a family. Everybody knew everybody. We went to school with each other. We grew up together. So it was different to an ordinary army regiment. It was such a great feeling, like you belonged, and it was a link with home. So I was annoyed when he said that, but he said, I'm sorry, there's no alternative. I'll have to send you for the medical board. There's nothing else I can do about it. So I'd never mentioned anything to Joyce about my epilepsy. I knew that if I did, she'd probably say cheerio and that'd be it. So I never let her know anything. Well, after I'd seen the doctor, I went back to the quarters and I was feeling real miserable. Well, blimey, what'll happen now? If I get discharged, Joyce will get to know about it. She'd want to know why, and lots of other people. I'd kept it a secret as best as I could. Not even my best friends knew. Those 7 years as a child when I suffered with epilepsy, they were a nightmare. Those who have suffered from it will understand the feeling. Thought, Bonnie, if Joyce knew that I suffered from epilepsy, she wouldn't have wanted anything more to do with me. I couldn't get it out of my mind, you know, what was going to happen. And to be honest, there were times when I felt like ending it all, taking an overdose or something. These thoughts kept flashing through my mind. I couldn't sleep, I was getting worse. I kept writing to Joyce, but never mentioned it to her, and her letters kept coming back, and it was just kept me going, and I was getting confused. Should I tell her, or shouldn't I, what? And then one day, I was summoned to HQ. I went in, I was told I was being sent on to go before a medical board. It was a Sunday morning. I said cheerio to the lads, was driven off in the staff car again. It was Jack Powell again who drove me. Eventually we got there, I just forget the name of the place. It was the regimental HQ, the headquarters of the whole regiment. I had to stay there overnight. Arthur McVaney, who worked with me in the post office, he was stationed there. I couldn't say anything anyway. The following morning after breakfast, Jack Powell drove me off to a military hospital in Bath. It was quite away from the regiment's HQ. It was only Jack and me in the car, so we were able to talk without being under the eyes of an officer. After about 4 hours' drive, we pulled up at a big hospital. So I inquired at the office and was directed to a room. So I waited there about half an hour or so, and then an orderly opened the door and told me to go into this other room. I took a deep breath and straightened my shoulders and I walked slowly, as yet as soldierly as I could, and straight up to the desk. In the centre of this room there were three high-ranking officers. One was a colonel, and they had a portfolio on the desk in which all my, apparently, my medical history sheets were there. Then he started asking me questions, and I was replying with as much caution as I could. One of the questions seemed ridiculous. He said, "Do you like army life, Adams?" So I said, "Yes, sir, very much." He leaned over the desk and he said, "Would you like to leave the army and return to civil life?" I was amazed. I couldn't answer for a minute. He repeated the question. I collected myself and I answered truthfully, "No, sir, not until after the war's finished." The colonel straightened himself up and picked up the pile of papers. He said, "Very good," he said. "Will you strip off now?" And while I was undressing, the colonel had a conversation with the other two medical blokes. And when I was undressed, stripped off, the three doctors came and they examined me all over, muttering comments to each other now and again. When they had finished, the colonel said, "That's all, Adams." So I got dressed, came to attention, said, "Good afternoon, sir." I saluted and turned round and then marched out of the room. When I got back to it, eventually got back to the station again, I went straight back on duty and carried on as usual. It was all right in the daytime, but night time I used to get queer moods, wondering what's going to happen, and I couldn't wonder what life had in store for me, whether I was going to be thrown out. If I did, what would happen? So I started going for long walks in the blackout on my own. I started smoking, a thing I'd never done before. Then some nights I went to the pub, which was a good way from the station, and had a drink or two. I used to sit in the corner on my own and watch with envy all the young airmen and soldiers with their girls laughing and singing, full of health and energy, comparing them to me and what was going to happen. Joyce still kept writing regularly, such lovely letters. I hardly knew how to answer them. In one, she enclosed a lock of her beautiful hair, beautiful blonde hair. Many times I thought I'd better not answer her letters anymore, or write and tell her to forget all about me. But somehow or other, I just couldn't find it in myself to do it. And so the correspondence carried on, with Joyce back in Douglas, unconscious of the mental agony I was going through. Then one day I was summoned into the battery office again. The major looked at me as I entered. I came to attention and saluted. "You want me, sir?" I said. "Yes, Adams," he said. "Your discharge has just arrived. You will be leaving us tomorrow. I'm sorry to lose you, but it seems the doctors at the medical board think you are no longer fit enough for the service." So that's how I found out the result of the examination at Bath. I looked at the major. I said, "But sir, I don't feel that bad, sir. I'll be all right in a week or so." The major smiled and said, "I'm sorry, Adams, but I've got nothing to say in the matter. Those doctors must know what's wrong with you. It's best to take notice of what they say. You have to think of your health first." "No, I'm sorry, Adams. I don't want you to go, but these are the orders." He stood up and put his hand out. "I shook hands," he said. "Good luck, Adams," he said. "I hope you'll get better soon. Look after yourself." I said, "Thank you very much, sir. I'm proud to have served under you. And if I may say so, sir, may I wish you the best of luck wherever you may go." Major Knife and smiled, and he said, "Thank you very much, Adams." So I left the office in despair. The inevitable had happened. I was going to leave the battery, all my pals, and the regiment. I was proud of that regiment. Sooner or later, when the fighting really started, the regiment would be going into action, side by side on some foreign soil, fighting for freedom. There'd be Patton, Hawkeye, Pud, Tubby, Jack, Nobby, and all those other grand fellows. While I'd be back at home with the old people, the women and the old crocs, unable to do anything. And then what was there to go home to? Since my mother had died, my single sister Connie had got married, my father had given up the home in Hillside Avenue and gone to live with my eldest sister Winnie in the main road. So there was no home to go to like it was. What could I tell Joyce that I'd been discharged for? The right thing would be to tell her the truth and end the friendship right away. Yet, Joyce was the only thing I've got left to cling to. That night I went to the roadhouse with several of the boys and had a farewell party. We had a good few drinks and singing until closing time. Then we wandered back to the station. Tears went far from my eyes as we walked in the middle of the boys. I'd come to love them as much as brothers. There was Tubby Ryan, he was to die out in North Africa a year or so later. Tommy Blower and Dennis Pease. He was a lad who I'd met come out of the Royalty Cinema that night, who told us the regiment was going to be called up. And Joyce was with me. He was to be killed, shot in the back while he was part of a gun crew in the North African campaign. And arm in arm we all went back to the billets. Next day, I said goodbye to every one of them. They were all sorry to see me go because we'd all been amongst the first to join the Terriers in 1938, and most of them I'd known all my life. It was with deepest regret and emptiness in my heart that I set up along the road to the railway station. Tommy Blower walked with me to the station. He was going home on leave. Some of the boys stood at the gates of the camp watching us go up this long road. And so it was I set off on the long journey home, wondering what the outcome would be and what life had in store for me from now on. It was a long journey on the train up to Liverpool. Most of the night, Tommy Blower kept talking about one thing or another, but I couldn't be bothered listening to his conversation. I kept wondering, what am I going to say when I get back home? I'd never told anyone that there was a chance of me being discharged or what was the matter. I'd never sent word to them or intimated in the letters, and I was wondering what my father and my sister Winnie would say. What would Joyce think and say? I was all mixed up. I couldn't think straight. Anyway, we got to Liverpool and got the boat. There's quite a few servicemen on the boat because there was quite a lot of Army and Navy and Air Force personnel stationed on the island. Because the houses on the promenade at Douglas had been converted into a prisoner of war camp, and there was a prisoner of war camp at Ramsey and at Peel and Port Erin, Port St Mary. So there was quite a lot of military personnel on the island. There was boarding houses on the Lock Promenade had been converted to a naval training establishment. It was called the HMS Valkyrie. They were training to be radar operators. Oh, it was terrific in numbers. So the boat was quite packed with forces personnel. And when we got to Douglas, I said cheerio to Tommy Blower, and I caught a bus up to the end of Domain Road and got off there and walked into my sister's house. My father was in the house at the time. They both got a shock when they saw me and asked me, "What's the matter? What are you doing here? You're on leave? How long are you home for?" I told them, I said, "I'm finished. I've been discharged." So they wanted to know why, and I said, "Oh, I wasn't feeling too good, and I saw the doctor, and they sent me to a ward, and they discharged me." Still wanting to know the ins and outs, but I told them, "Oh, I'll tell you later." So I went upstairs and I changed into my civilian clothes. Put my civilian suit on, and I went out to look for Ivor Mailer. I called at his house, but his mother told me that he was on a week's holiday, he'd gone to the mainland. So I was feeling pretty miserable, and I walked down Bucks Road. I thought there might be a chance I'll see Joyce. But what the hell am I going to say to her? Hey, I stopped opposite the house and thought, oh, I'll see her some other time. But just then the door opened and she came out of the house carrying some books under her arm. So she said, didn't see me. She started walking down Bucks Road. So I rushed up behind her. I just drew alongside her. I said, hello. She turned around. She said, Bing, what are you doing? When did you come home? So I said, I just came today. So I said, where are you going? She said, I'm just going down to the library to change my books. So I said, I'll walk down with you. So I walked down, and after a while she says, why aren't you in the uniform? She said, it's a long time I've seen you without a uniform. So I bit my lip and I said, I've been discharged, Joyce. She says, why? What's the matter? So I said, well, I haven't been well for some time, and I saw the doctor and he sent me to a medical board and they discharged me. She said, you never mentioned anything in your letters. Why didn't you let me know you were sick? What was it? So I said, oh, it's a bit complicated. So we got down to the library and I said, I'll wait outside for you. So she went in to change her books. So when she came out, she said, let's go for a walk, I want to hear all about it. So we walked down onto the promenade and the little shelters and the lock promenade. So we went and with seats inside the shelters. We went and sat on the seat inside the shelter and she said, now tell me, Bing, tell me all about it. I couldn't tell her that I'd had epilepsy as a child and I was worried in case it was going to come back. I just told her, I said, oh, I got a bad cold and they thought it was double pneumonia or something. And then I said, on my army discharge, it just says ceasing to fulfill army physical requirements. I told her, I don't know what I'm going to do, Joyce. I'm real miserable. I said, I hate leaving all the boys, Pat and Fred Hughes and all the gang there that I've been with all the time, and Bud. I said, it's really upset me having to leave them. We've known each other so long and it was great being with them. I said, I suppose I'll have to go back to the post office now and work. She said, well, it must have been serious, Bing. Well, whatever it was, perhaps you'll get better and see how it goes. I said, I just don't feel like doing anything. She said, well, now you're back here. She said, why don't you try and start a band? You were always on about starting a dance band. Why don't you try? I said, oh, I'll see how it goes, Joyce. I said, I don't want to be here. I said, people will be thinking I'm yellow, that I'm a coward. And I've worked me ticket. She said, no, Bing. She said, don't feel like that. Even people say anything like that, don't take any notice. We know it's not true. You'll have to take things easy till you're A1 again. Yeah, I couldn't help laughing. I said, what do I do till then? Go back to the post office? Selling stamps and sorting letters? Work that women and girls can do? Well, all the boys are over there doing a men's job. I'd rather be dead. Yeah, I'll come off it, she said, Bing. Remember, I said that to you once, and you told me not, never to talk like that. Well, be patient. See how you go on, she said. Try and start a band to take some interest. Carry on just as you did before you went away. The whole world's before us. Michael Lake take a bit of time, but you can do it if you want. So I took her and I said, thanks a million. Thanks a million, Joyce. I said, I'm sorry for talking like I did. It's just what I feel about at the moment after leaving the boys. I said, okay, I'll see, but we'll see what comes, eh? So she gave me a kiss, held me close. She said, don't worry, boy. Don't worry, Bing. So she said, I'll have to go home now. So we got up and I walked home with her. It was awful hard lying to her like that. And anyways, I walked home with her. She went in the house and arranged to meet her the following night to go to the pictures. Well, I had a week or so's leave from the army due, so during that week I went to the post office and showed them me discharge. So the postmaster was a rather gruff sort of man, big, heavy built man, Mr. Gibson. He said, oh, glad to see you back, Bing. Because a lot of the staff, regular staff, had been called up and gone away to the forces. There weren't so many left. They were going every week, apparently. And their places were taken by older men and young girls, temporary staff. So I started work there and but being so short-staffed, I had to work loads of overtime. But I didn't mind it. It helped pass the time away, and I started to feel a bit better. I was going, meeting Joyce and going for walks with her and going to the cinema each week, a couple of times a week. And I don't know how I'd have managed without her. Without having her, don't think I'd have been able to face it all, but she made me feel good. And Lenny Uren, he hadn't been called up, the pianist, because he had bad eyesight and some injury to one of his arms. I don't know what it was, but he couldn't straighten it proper. But it didn't affect him playing the piano. Well, he and I got in touch with him, and he appeared in a few concerts, the two of us singing with him playing the piano. So Joyce kept saying to me, why don't you start a band with Lenny Uren? So I talked it over with Lenny, but he wasn't all that keen at the time. It's all right playing the piano and singing. Anyway, a couple of months went by, and then one day I received papers to report at the recruiting office with my age group. Me calling up papers, my age group. So I went along to the recruiting office, and they asked, have you served in the Army, Navy or Air Force before? So I said, no. I kept my fingers crossed, and I went was examined by two doctors. Then they told me I'd passed grade one. I nearly jumped up the ceiling. And then at the desk they asked you what you would like to go into, or the Air Force, the Army or the Navy. What would be your preference? So I said the infantry, the Army and the infantry. But then they said you worked in the post office, didn't you? What qualifications in the post office? So I mentioned town to work and tell a printer, so they said, oh, we'll put you down for the Royal Corps of Signals. So that's what they put me down for. That night I met Joyce and we went to the cinema. Then after the show we went and sat on our usual seat in this little shelter on the promenade. And I put my arm around her and I told her, Joyce, I was at the recruiting office today and guess what? She said, what? I said, they passed me grade one and entered me for the Royal Corps of Signals. She was quite amazed. She said, well, that's wonderful, Bing. You'll be happy now, won't you? I don't know. I said, yes, sir. It'll be grand to be back in uniform again. I told her, I said, I don't want to leave you really, but I want to help in this war against the Nazis. What you read in the paper every day, the things they're doing, just makes your blood boil, you know. I want to get back and do something, try and help stop it. She says, well, I feel proud of you, Bing. She says, at least you've got courage. Let's hope everything will be all right when it's all over. We can start planning our lives. So I said, thanks, Joe. She always called herself Joe, not Joyce. And I got into the habit, too, of calling her Joe. So we got up and walked up home and just before we got the house, we stopped in the shop doorway and I said, I've never actually told you before, Joyce, because I always thought you were too young. But I feel now in my heart, I must tell you, I love you, Joyce. She put her head up and she gave me a kiss on the cheek and she said, I've been waiting for you to hear you say that, Bing, because I love you too. I always will. The next night I had a bad headache, really bad headache. I thought it was going to start all over again. So I should have met Joyce, but I didn't turn up. I went to a public house and I stayed there all night having a drink, drinking whiskey and whiskey. On my way home, I wasn't feeling a bit too steady and I almost bumped into Joyce's friend Mabs in the blackout. She was amazed to see me and she just muttered good night and then ran away. I just vaguely thought it was Mabs Kinraid, but I wasn't too sure. I didn't bother any more about it. So when I got home, everyone was in bed, so I put the radio on and sat there. I didn't feel hungry and I fell asleep by the fireplace. The next night I went to meet Joyce as usual. It was the night her father and mother went to the pictures. They went twice a week, so when they went to the pictures, I used to go upstairs into the living room with her. Geoffrey was there doing his homework. So she asked me, she said, where did you get to last night? I was waiting for you. I said, oh, I'm sorry, Joyce, I had to work overtime. She said, oh, I thought you must have had a good reason. Still, you wouldn't have to work in the post office much longer. She said, I was talking to Ivor this morning. I like him a lot. He's a nice chap, isn't he? So Leslie lifted his head up and he said, oh, you'll have to watch her, Bing. She talks a lot about Ivor. So I said, oh, I'll have to watch him. Anyway. But I said, you know, it won't be long before I get word to go, so I'll write to Ivor. as usual and send the letters with him, that'll be okay, won't it? And she said yes, so. Just then the music came on the radio. It was our favourite song one day when we were young, a waltz. So we got up and put our arms each other and danced around the room, and Leslie was saying, "You're a pair of fools, you two." Had a good laugh. And then time went by. We helped Leslie a bit with his homework. Then I had to go, so kissed her goodnight and set off home. I went straight home. Eventually, after a couple of weeks, my calling up papers came. So that night I met her and we went to the pictures. I didn't tell her at the time. We watched the movie, and then when the show was finished, we walked out the promenade to our usual seat. Once we sat there, I put my arms around her and I said, "I've got me calling up papers today, Joyce. Time will come, I've got to go away again." She said, "Oh, I'm glad for you, Bing," she said. "You'll be all right, you'll be all right, won't you?" So I said, "Oh, yes, I'll be all right." She said, "I've worried so much about you." I said, "There's no need for you to worry about me. I'll be worrying about you." I said, "Once I go away and get me training." It was still like the Cold War. I said, "Perhaps either call an armistice or else the war'll start properly. If it does, the sooner it starts, really, the better. Get it finished with over once and for all. I want to do me bit to help." She was saying, I wish I could go too, Bing. She said, "I want to go and train to be a nurse." One of her friends who she'd been at school with, named Bell, apparently she'd gone away to the mainland to do training as a nurse. Joyce said, "I wish I could have gone with her." I said, "Oh, you don't have to go away, Joyce. There's plenty to do at home. You could join the Red Cross." Join the Red Cross. Try and get in trainee nurse in Douglas here, Nobles Hospital. She said, "Oh, I want to do my bit for the war as much as everybody else." I said, "No, you'd be far better off here with your father and mother and Leslie and Dorothy." I said, "Little Dorothy would be lost without you." Because Joyce was devoted to her little sister. She's a beautiful child. But she said she wanted to go away. I said, I'd feel terrible if you were away, Joyce, worrying about you." I said, "Going away," I said, "you know, it's all right for a while, and then the novelty wears off. And you suddenly find how much you miss your home, your mum and your dad, and the rest of your family and your friends. And the little things you never think of before you go. Perhaps you feel sick or something goes wrong at work or you need something, then you turn around and you find there's no one to run to like you had at home. Then you get an empty feeling in your stomach. That's homesick. It's an awful feeling, Joyce. Really, in my heart, I don't want you to go away. It's my duty to do me bit. I'm a man. Think over what I said, Joyce. Wait until there is a vacancy in the hospital here at Nobles. You do well there." She listened to what I was saying and then she said, "All right, Bing, I'll try and wait a bit longer." Then we walked a little bit on along the promenade and up the Bucks Road, the arms round each other. It was a beautiful night. Anyway, I met her another, took her to the pictures a couple of nights later. How well I remember it. We went to the Regal Cinema at the bottom of Victoria Street, and the film was called The Light That Failed. Ronald Coleman was the star in the film. It was a wonderful story, and we both loved Ronald Coleman as acting, as voice. It was a lovely night, and after the show we walked along the promenade and back. On the way back we stood leaning over the railings looking out towards the sea. The light from the moon and the stars was reflected on the water. It was an absolutely gorgeous night. Could see a ship out at sea steaming, making its way towards the harbour. Joyce said to me, "Isn't it a glorious night, Bing?" She said, "I love to stand here and listen to the sea rolling into the shore. I often come down here and stand here, just at this spot by the railings here." And she said, "It just sounds as if the sea talks to me. I often come here, Bing. Ever since I was a tiny tot, I've loved the sea." I said to her, "What a night." And there was somebody come walking along the promenade. A couple of sailors, a couple of girls, and one of them was singing, "When Day Is Done and Shadows Fall." I said, "That's a lovely song, isn't it, Joyce?" She said, "Yes." She says, "One of my favourite songs, that thing." I said, "Every time I hear it, I'll think of you while I'm away." She said, "So will I, Bing." She says, "Every night, whilst you're away, I'll come here and stand at this spot. And then I'll feel nearer to you, here by the sea. I'll give it a..."